Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. I want to say a couple of personal things to you before we partake of God's word. I want to start by saying how much we miss, we miss not being together in person with each other. And when I say that, I'm aware that there are those out there who feel like this is just really gutting the strength of the church. We've listened to a number of different people over the weeks here now, and they're just like, where is the church at? What is, you know, what's going on? How can they tell us we can't meet? All those kinds of things like that. And I was thinking about that, what it must have been like for those early believers when they were used to meeting together. You know, when you read the book of Acts in chapter 2 and in chapter 4, they were meeting together, hanging out with each other, enjoying the graces of God together. And then all of a sudden persecution broke out against them, and they were literally, many of them, were fleeing for their lives. And the way they were used to doing things was being changed and awkward, difficult, unwanted, just like this is for us. But I want to remind you today that God actually used that to bring about his greater purpose. And I don't know how he's going to do that through all of this. I think one of the things that may be happening in the midst of all of this is it's creating a deeper hunger in people's hearts and lives. Not only a hunger to want to be together, but a hunger to find God in the midst of this, a hunger to know God in the midst of this. So I'm really believing, and I trust you will join me, I'm really believing that God is going to use this, just like he has so many other adverse things that have happened in the world, that he will use it to bring about his greater purpose. That's what I'm praying for. That's what I'm longing for. You know, who'd have ever thought that in doing church the way we're having to do it right now, that there would be people tuning in online who would never find their way through the front doors of the church? We are hearing reports week after week of people who are finding this because some of you are sharing it somehow in the way, however you do that, online, you're sharing it with someone, and they're tuning in on Sunday mornings and at other times to see and hear what's going on here. So I just want to encourage you with that today, that, you know, don't look at this through the eyes or the lens of doom and gloom. Look at it through the lenses of what God's done in the past when adversity has come upon people and how he's used that. We really believe, I know you believe this, that God does work all things together for the good, for those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. So I just share that with you from my heart to yours this morning. And anyways, I trust all is well in your world. We've been keeping our ear to the, tuned in to various people and hearing what's going on in their world. And as of yet, I'm not aware of anybody here within the fellowship who's struggling with this particular virus. And we're praying faithfully every day that God would spare us of that, that God would put his army of angels and his bubble of grace and protection around each and every one of you. Well, as many of you know who've been tuning in with us, both when we started this, when we were yet still together, and now since we've gone to the online format, you'll know that we've been doing a series entitled I Am. The very first week I shared with you when that first originated was when God made a visit to a man by the name of Moses, who the Bible tells us was on the backside of the desert just doing what he was being asked to do, tending the flocks there on the backside of the wilderness. So God showed up and had called Moses to act as an emissary, as someone to go and br- bring the deliverance the people of Israel needed out of Egypt. And as God was in dialogue with Moses about all that, Moses poised the question to God. He said, well, who am I supposed to say is sending me? And at that point, God revealed to him the name Yahweh, which means I am, or I am that I am. And when God did that, he was essentially saying to Moses and to us that I will be whatever it is you need me to be. It was kind of like he said, I am, and then drew a line and said, fill in the blank. Whatever it is that you are genuinely in need of, I will be that for you. And so we've been looking at how Jesus used that phrase when he was doing his ministry here on earth, how Jesus used that phrase, I am, and then filled in the blank. The first week we talked about how Jesus said, I am the bread of life. And in saying that, he was telling us that we can find every longing we have, every hunger we have, fulfilled in him. If we feed upon him, we will have our longings satisfied. Then a number of weeks ago now, Pastor Josh shared with us how Jesus said, I am the light of the world. What Jesus was saying in that was, he is able, we have dark places in our life, right? Jesus is saying, I am able to light up those dark places of your life. That those are needs we have. And he's able to provide light for those dark places in our hearts and in our lives. And then he's able to take us out of that place of darkness and bring us into his marvelous light. I am, Jesus said, the light of the world. He then went on to say, I am the vine, and you are the branches. He was saying to us in that life that flows through the vine and out to the branches, that he's able to provide that sustaining life, but not just the life. He's able to bring such life to us and in us and through us that we might be able to produce abundant fruit. You know, all of us have this need of wanting to feel useful or purposeful. And what Jesus is saying is, I'm able to meet that need in you as you stay connected to me. I promise, as my life flows through you, you will produce much fruit. Then we looked at how Jesus said, I am the door. I am the door. He is our access. He is our acceptance into the kingdom of God. All of us have a need and a longing to be accepted. Jesus is saying to us, I will meet that need if you come to me, the door, to find your acceptance and access into the kingdom. On the outside of this door, I want to be sure I'm clear about this. On the outside of the door, though there be just one door, on the outside of that door, it says, whosoever will may come. There are no barriers. There's no race barriers. There's no economic barriers. There's no gender barriers. Everyone is welcome to find their acceptance and their access into his kingdom by coming to him, the door. Then I shared with you the very first week we were doing it in this format, I shared with you kind of an alternative time that Jesus said, I am. He said at the very end, some of the last words, in fact, it may be the last words that he spoke to the early disciples. He said, I am with you always. And I want you to know that he is with us in the good times. He's with us when the sun is out, and he's with us when it's raining. Right now, it feels like we're kind of in one of those rainy seasons where, you know, it's hard to find God in all of this. And I just want you to know today, again, that he is with us. He is with us. He will never leave us or forsake us. And then last week, I shared with you how Jesus said, I am the shepherd, the excellent one. I am the shepherd, the excellent one. And I shared last week with those who were listening that Jesus is telling us that one of the needs he's looking to fulfill in us is that sense of belonging. He wants us to know that we have someone to whom we belong, someone who is watching over us, taking care of us, looking to lead us and bring us to places of fullness and rest and where all of our needs, and when David wrote Psalm 23, he said, the Lord is my shepherd. He will not fail me. There will be no lack in my life. He will provide for everything that I need. And then David begins to list in that psalm the various way God as shepherd provided for him. And I just want to say to us again this morning, he will provide for us. He is the shepherd, the excellent one. This morning, I would like to share with you another I am statement of Jesus. You can read it if you have your Bibles there. You can turn to John chapter 14. It's found in verse 6. There in John 14, 6, Jesus says this, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Some of you have heard that verse before. Some of you have probably memorized that verse. I know when I was a little boy and we were going through Sunday school and VBS type programs, this was one of the verses I remember being said to us time and time again. Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now, again, like so many other verses we hear or passages we read, it's vitally important that we understand the context within which Jesus said these words. What was going on around them in that moment that would cause him to say this particular I am statement? Most of you probably know, as Scott, Pastor Scott already mentioned in the beginning of our worship time, today marks Palm Sunday on the church calendar. And this Sunday begins the week that's called, typically called Passion Week or the Week of Passion. This is the week between Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ next Sunday. This whole week, there was a bunch of events and activities that took place, more than I can talk to you about today. But I want to zero in on this moment here in John 14, 13 and 14, that took place during the week of Passion. I want to particularly draw your attention to the day of Thursday of that week. In the beginning part of the day, Jesus told his disciples to go out and make preparations so that they could celebrate the Passover meal together. So they did that. The disciples went out and they began to make ready a place for them where they could together celebrate the Passover meal. And then we begin to read in chapter 13 that the evening came. It was nighttime now, and Jesus and his disciples were together at the place where they had prepared to celebrate this meal together. And this would be the third time that they would be doing this together. Remember, this is 3 years in to the ministry, to Christ's earthly ministry. So it would have been the third time that they have celebrated this meal together. And when they initially came together on that evening, I'm sure everything felt like it did every other time they came together for this meal. But something would be significantly different about this night. Things were about to dramatically change. This meal would become a drastically different meal. First, the first thing that happened differently as they were starting to partake in this meal together, it tells us that Jesus got up from the meal and began to take on the role of a servant. He girded himself with the servant's attire, and he began to take a bowl along with a towel and begin to wash the disciples' feet. Now, we know in that moment, this had never, ever happened before. This was something that they had never experienced before. In fact, it should have been happening the other way around. They should have been offering to wash Jesus' feet. But here we have a situation where Jesus is now offering to wash their feet. And you can tell as you read through that passage that it was an incredibly awkward moment. As he was going around the circle looking to wash their feet, you could tell that just as you read there, that they were feeling awkward and uncomfortable about this. We find out that Peter particularly feels incredibly awkward about it and says, "Lord, you're not going to wash my feet." And of course, if you remember in that passage, Jesus said, "If you don't let me wash your feet, then you can have no part with me." And Peter says, "Well, not just my feet, Lord, but my whole body." And there was some conversation about that. But you can tell that the night took a decisively different direction when Jesus started to wash his disciples' feet. But something else was different about this night. It tells us that the next thing that happened is that in the course of him finishing up his talk about washing their feet, he moves right into a discussion about someone within their circle who's going to betray them. Someone was going to rat him out. Someone was going to make a life choice that would cause for Christ's demise. Now, in that passage, Jesus says, "I tell you the truth, one of you is going to betray me." Then it tells us, this is the part that I want you to see, it tells us how the disciples reacted to what Jesus just said. It says there that they stared at one another at a loss to know which of them he was referring to. Now, here's the really interesting part. You'll notice in that verse, there is this phrase, "at a loss." Remember, Jesus has just said, "one of you." They don't know. We know because we know the story. But you got to put yourself in their situation. Here are 12 men who have been with Jesus for 3 years now, leaning on his every word, watching his miracles take place. And now Jesus says, unbeknownst to any of them, "one of you is going to betray me." You can imagine the shock. You can imagine, if you just stop and think about it a minute, you can imagine the out of nowhere this is coming. And it says there that they were at a loss to know which of them it might be. They're thinking, they're looking around at each other and wondering which one of them is going to be the mole. Which one of them has been the mole? Which one of them is going to be the one to betray him? Now, this "at a loss" phrase is very interesting because the phrase is actually one word in the original language. And the root of that one word means journey, which is quite interesting when you think about it. Now, when I first started to research this a little bit, I thought, what does that have to do with where they're at in the moment? And then it dawned on me as I kind of began to put the pieces together. These guys, what that phrase is trying to communicate is that in this moment of Jesus announcing that someone was going to betray him, they were in that moment lost on their journey with Jesus. They couldn't figure out where they were at, what in the world was going on when he announced that someone was going to betray him. I don't know about you, but maybe you have been at a point in your life journey, in your journey with Christ, where it's felt something like that. Like you're confused about what's going on, you're not quite sure what's taking place, where you're at, and all of that. That is how the disciples would have felt. So he announces that someone is going to betray him. Shortly after announcing that, you can read the passage for yourself, Judas gets up and leaves the circle. Again, I'm not sure that they understood that maybe Judas was the one exactly. We know a little bit later, Jesus said, it's the one who's going to dip his bread in the bowl with me, and that certainly gave them a huge clue. But we find Judas leaving, exiting the scene. And on the heels of Jesus saying that, or Judas doing that, Jesus now informs them. He tells them, "I am going to be leaving you." Remember, we've got the awkwardness of washing their feet. We've got Jesus now telling them that someone is going to betray them, and now Jesus is saying, "I am going to be leaving, and I'm going to be going somewhere that you cannot come. I'm going to be leaving our small group here, our community. I'm going to be exiting our community, and I'm going to be going somewhere that you can't come with me." Peter stands up in the midst of this moment of Jesus announcing that he's going to be leaving them and essentially says to Jesus, "I'm willing to lay down my life for you, so I should be able to go wherever it is that you are going. I'm all in, so you got to let me come with you." And as Peter is saying this, Jesus says to Peter, "Peter, will you really lay down your life for me?" He's asking a question of Peter now. "Will you really lay down your life for me?" And then he goes on to say this, "I tell you, Peter, that before the morning comes," he uses the phrase, "before the rooster crows three times, you will betray me. You will deny me. You will deny me. Before the morning comes, you will deny me." Can you imagine the rest of the 10 now that are left behind? Peter, I'm sure as you read the gospel accounts, was always seen as kind of their point person of the group. He was always the one to step forward and try to give the right answer. He was always the one who, you know, seemed to understand things. And now Jesus is saying to Peter, "Before tomorrow morning, you will end up denying me three times." Now, to be fair to Peter, the rest of the disciples, if you read all the gospel accounts, they had also insinuated that they were willing to lay their lives down for Jesus. And yet none of them were there Thursday and forward to defend Jesus at his trial. None of them were there, except maybe John, who was with Christ's mother at the foot of the cross. But none of them were there to kind of stand up for Jesus. They had all gone in their different directions. And so we know the story of Peter particularly, that when asked if he knew Jesus, he denied knowing him on three separate occasions. I wanted to say, maybe you have been at some place where you have felt rejection in life. Maybe a relationship has gone south for you. Maybe you have had multiple moments like that in life where you have faced the people who didn't want to know you anymore. That's the kind of moment that Jesus finds himself in. This meal that was familiar to them was taking on very unfamiliar tones. It was this meal that they had probably looked forward to had now gone from bad, awkward, in the foot washing, to way worse. A betrayer, Jesus telling him he's going to leave them. He's telling them that the leader of their group is going to end up denying that he even knows Jesus. This meal had gone from bad to worse. Is it any wonder then in John chapter 14, verse 1, Jesus says these words, "Let not your heart be troubled." Let not your heart be troubled. You see, it was all spinning in their worlds. It had to have felt like this thing was spinning out of control. And so it was very appropriate in that moment for Jesus to say to them, "Let not your heart be troubled." Their hearts were troubled because of what was happening and what Jesus was saying. The word for troubled in the Greek means to be disturbed, to be terrified, and to be thrown into confusion. Jesus is saying, don't let your heart come unhinged. Don't let your heart be full of fear and terror. Don't let it be utterly disturbed and thrown into confusion. It describes what I would call a state of being lost. Of being lost. When someone is genuinely lost, I'm not talking about someone who kind of knows where they're at, they're just turned around a little bit, but they're genuinely lost, it's hard not to panic. It's hard not to get utterly confused and disturbed. In fact, I was looking this week doing a little bit of research on, you know, what's the number one reaction when people are lost. And I found a website that was actually put out by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and it was an article about what to do when you're feeling genuinely lost. And the first thing it said in their article, it was 8 things to do or not to do. The first thing in the article, it says, don't panic. Don't panic. Why? Because there is something in us as human beings that when we know things are like out of our control or we're feeling confused or whatever, the number one thing we do is panic. We get anxious on the inside. And in that article it says the number one thing not to do is to begin to get full of panic. Because when you're full of panic, you're not going to make good decisions. I want to tell you a personal story. I have multiple stories of feeling this way. I can remember a couple of times, even as a child or a young person, getting separated, from your parents or whatnot, and the feeling that induces. But I'm also reminded of a time when. Even as a little bit older adult, and I was out in the woods, and I kind of got turned around in a place they call the Stump Patch. And it was a place that was logged back in the 30s and 40s in Pennsylvania, and it all looks the same. And so there aren't any landmarks. It's a real flat area. There aren't any landmarks that you could really point to, and you're too far away from any roads to hear traffic. And I can remember getting turned around in what was called the Stump Patch one time and feeling that sense of panic as the end of the day was drawing near. Fortunately, I did find my way out of that. But the one I want to tell you about was actually, we weren't the ones who were lost. We were the ones trying to find the one who we thought was lost. But it generated that same sense of panicking and being out of control. It actually happened a number of years ago when our son Hans was around probably 4 or 5 years old. We happened to live here in the church, in the house next to the church, and Hans was at the age of being able to ride a bike, and it was before the addition out here in the newest addition in the front of the church, and so there was a sidewalk that you may all remember, a grade that went down and then turned and went down into the parking lot, and he loved to ride his bicycle down that hill on the sidewalk. It was smooth, and you know, he just loved to ride his bike. And so, you know, one day he said, you know, can I go out and ride my bike? And we said, as parents, sure, you know, just, you know, don't go out in the road, stay away from the road, but, you know, you can go out and ride down the sidewalk and in the parking lot and so forth and so on. And I don't know how much time passed by, but a little bit of time passed by, and we happened to look out and we saw his bicycle laying out in the front yard, in the middle of the front yard, just a bicycle laying there. And I remember I was in my office when it was still over here next door to the in the milk house here in the older part of the church building. And Jody came to my office and she said, you know, have you seen Hans? And I said, no, I haven't seen him recently. And she said, well, his bike is laying out in the middle of the yard. And I've looked for him and I can't find him anywhere. And I said, well, you know, he's got to be somewhere here. We'll find him. So we began to, you know, kind of look around the church area here. She went, if I remember right, she went back over to the house and kind of looked through the house and was hollering his name. And I went through, you know, the various rooms in the church and I was hollering his name. And we looked outside and out in the backyard. We looked all around and we kind of met over here in the driveway. And by this time, I could sense the panic building, especially in my wife's heart. And so she said she couldn't find him. I said I couldn't find him. And I got to be honest with you, we were starting to lose it. It was starting to, and she's like, what should we do? What should we do? And I said, well, maybe he went over to the neighbors. We had some kids that lived in the adjacent park next door here. And I said, maybe he ventured over there and he's over playing with one of them. So, you know, I said, I'll look around the church again. You go over to the neighbors and see if he happens to be over there. And so, you know, the pace is picking up now. You can feel the tension building. And we started to look through, I started to look through the church again. Meanwhile, Jody went over. She went to each of the neighbors. Hans wasn't anywhere next door, and I couldn't find him here in the church. We met back up right here in the driveway between the house, the church house and the building, and now literally we are in full-blown panic. Jody is she's on the ground bawling, saying, hollering, someone has taken Hans. And the next thing that we could think to do was to call the police. And so I said, we'll go in and call 911 and, you know, we'll figure it out, right? As she went in, I said, well, you're calling 911, I'm going to do one last sweep through the church. And as I came in the milk house door, my office door was open. And as I was passing by, it's not a very big room. It's just a tiny room. And he obviously wasn't in the room. But as I was passing by the room, I saw the chair move. We had a rocker recliner in there at the time. And I saw the chair move. And I said, Hans? And he kind of sheepishly came out from behind the chair. And I don't know, you know, that was one of those mixed moments, right, where I was thrilled that he materialized, but I was so angry as far as what had transpired. So I said, Hans, what in the world are you doing? And he said, I was playing hide and go seek. And I said, Hans, you've got to let the people know if you're playing hide and go seek. I said, your mom right now is calling the police. So we went in, and she was still on the phone. She went in, and I, you know, obviously he's now, I probably had a good grip on his arm by that point, and I led him into the house. And of course, again, like I said, it was a happy reunion that we had found our son, but there was also some pent up, even anger or anxiety as far as what had occurred. Now, I share that story with you simply to tell you, to example to you, that feeling that can come with inside of us when we're afraid, when we're in like a full-blown panic, what that's like. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know at what level or to what degree, but that had to have been the type of thing that the disciples were dealing with and why Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled." He wasn't saying, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's no big deal." He knew, based upon what was happening, that they were in trouble in their hearts. And so he said, "Let not your heart be troubled." He said, "Trust in God, trust also in me." Jesus now gives them some much needed information. He says to them this in verses 2 through 4 of chapter 14. "In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place I am going." Now, as I said, it must have been much needed relief for them in light of everything else that he had said, that he was going away, then they couldn't come where he's going. Now he's telling them that at some point he is going to come back to be with them and to take them where to the place he had been preparing for them. But he ends with those words, "You know the way to the place where I am going." Now, remember, they're kind of walking in like, we're lost, right? We don't know what in the world is going on. Everything is not normal for us right now. This is, we don't understand. We don't get it. They struggled to get it most of the time, but this time they're really struggling to wrap their brains and their hearts around what's transpiring. So Thomas, he says to the Lord, "Lord, how is it that we know where it is you're going, and how do we know how to get there?" And it's at that point Jesus says the words we're focusing on today. "I am the way, the truth, and the life." He says this statement to their great perplexity. He says this statement, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," when they are in an utter state of confusion about what in the world is going on. When Jesus calls himself the way, he is giving to them, and to us, I might add, our spiritual bearings. Our spiritual bearings. When someone is lost, the first thing that you need to get are your bearings. You need to figure out, where am I at? When Jesus says that he is the way, He is telling them where their bearings are at. In the natural, if you get lost geographically, the first thing that U.S. Department of Agriculture says is you need to get your bearings. You need to try to figure out where you're at in all of this. Determining someone's bearings is about getting your orientation or your position, where you're at relative to your surroundings and to your situation. You're looking to get your bearings. There is actually a sport out there, I've never participated in it, but I've heard of others who do, There is a sport called orienteering. Orienteering. Orienteering is a sport that requires navigational skills using a map and a compass, which they use to find their way from point to point in a territory that's unfamiliar to them. The National Organization for Orienteering here in America is called Orienteering USA. And listen to their motto. Their motto is this: find your way. Find your way. When Jesus says, I am the way, what he is telling them is he's trying to help them get their bearings again, right? They're lost, they're confused, they're disoriented. And he's telling them, I am the way. Put your eyes on me. Focus on me and everything will be fine. These disciples had lost their bearing, just like you and I sometimes lose our bearing. Jesus is giving to them their bearings again by telling them to focus on him. I am your way. I am the way, but I am your way. Focus on me. You know, when people are lost, if they know how to use a compass, I brought a compass with me today. If they have a compass, and a map would be helpful too. But if you have a compass, you can begin to know which way to go, right? If you have a compass, you can begin to detect where, at least where you are in relationship to where north is. Right? Because a compass, this little compass that I have here, I don't know if you can see it. This compass, oh, no matter which way you turn it, it always points towards the north. As I hold it here today, the part of the arrow that's indicating north is pointing in towards the back wall here. It's pointing in that direction. And it doesn't matter where I move this compass or which way I turn, the arrow indicating north always points towards that back wall. Why is that so? They call it true north. True north. Most of you probably know that our world is spinning really, really fast, right? The earth is rotating at a speed that we don't even feel or know or understand. But that spinning actually creates a magnetic pull that indicates always where true north is. So when Jesus says, he's already said, I am the way. When he says, I am the truth, what he's telling us is that you can always find true north to get your bearings, to help get your bearings. You can always find where true north is because just as that magnetic pull points this little area in the right direction, Jesus is saying, I am your north. I am your true north. You point your heart, you point your mind, you point your eyes towards me because I am your true north. If you're looking to get your bearings, point your life towards me. Because here's the thing, who I am, what I've told you, what I've taught you, what I've done among you, that will never, ever change. I am the same yesterday, today, and forever. And if you're looking to find your bearings or to get your bearings, then just point your life in my directions, and I promise you, you will figure things out. You will get some sense of normalcy. You'll get some sense of knowing where you're at. Jesus says, I am the way, I am the truth, and now he's about to say, I am the life. I want to read to you in terms of getting your bearings. I want to read this to you. It's a little article that I found this week as I was looking at some things. And it says, on July 16th, 1999, John F. Kennedy Jr. and his wife and sister-in-law took off from a New York City airport on their way to Martha's Vineyard for a wedding. He left a little later than expected, taking off just as the sun was setting. And although he'd logged more than 50 hours of nighttime flying, flying at night over the ocean required being able to fly with instruments only, something that he had not yet been certified to do. Just before reaching Martha's Vineyard, the NTSB reported that JFK succumbed to what's called spatial disorientation. Without a horizon and with no lights over the Atlantic, he became disoriented. Experts write that it is a terrifying thing to read instruments that are telling you something different than your body is feeling. Your body feels like it's going in one direction, and your mind yells, yank the yoke of the plane to compensate. But the key is to look at your gauges. And they might be telling you that your plane is straight and level, even if it feels like it is careening one direction or another. Or they might be telling you that your plane is in nosedive, even though it feels like it's straight and level. The NTSB declared that at some point, listen now, at some point, JFK Jr. took his eyes off the gauges. He began flying in a direction that felt true to him. But unknowingly, he was nosediving and he flew straight into the ocean. Chances are they never really knew that they were in trouble. It felt right. Right up to the point of impact. I think in large part, that's what's happening in the world you and I are living in. Most people are not flying by the right gauges, right? They're flying by what feels true to them. And yet Jesus is telling us, as his followers, he's telling us, you need to fix your eyes on me as your gauge in life. Get your eyes, it's not about what you're feeling, it's not about what you think, it's about fixing the gauge of your heart, fixing your eyes upon me and letting me be your way and your truth. Only then will you know your true bearings. Only then will you know exactly kind of where you are at in life. The last thing Jesus says in this phrase, I am the way, I am the truth, but then he says, I am the life. I am the life. This life that he's talking about is really the blessed life, the abundant life that he had spoken of so often, the kind of life that he had come to bring. The life that knows peace and joy because you're not living lost. You know where you're at. You have your bearings about you. You're not living in panic or fear. You're not living confused and out of focus. The blessed life is the one where your heart is at rest. Doesn't matter what's going on. Doesn't matter what circumstance. Your heart is at rest because you know that Jesus is your pilot. He is the one who's got the yoke in his hands. You know where you're at. You know where you are going. Jesus is saying when you rely on reliable life is in front of you. The abundant life will be yours. Jesus says, I am the way. I am your means of finding your bearings. I am your truth. I am the truth. It will never change. You can bank on it. You can count on it. Nothing is going to get out. It doesn't matter who says, it doesn't matter if there's some group that comes along and says, I'm not the truth. I am the truth. And if you embrace me as your way, if you embrace me as your truth, you will know me as your life. It's about us being able to find our way in life, or have our bearings as we journey through this world that is spinning. This world, it's not only spinning in the natural, it's spinning in the supernatural. It's spinning in the intangible. There's a lot of things spinning all the time. Jesus said, if you want to know your bearings, if you want to know where you're at, what's going on, then just get your focus on me. Just point your life, point your heart in my direction, and I will meet that need. You know, one of the greatest needs that we have in life is to have our bearings, right? It's when we're trying to live life and we don't have our bearings, we're out of sorts. It's a mess. It looks ugly, right? We're lost. Jesus says, I want to provide that need for you, that need that you have to know that despite what's going on around you, it'll be okay. It's going to be okay. I will give you that sense of peace and joy. I'm going to ask the worship team if they'll make their way back to the platform. I want to say just a couple of closing things, and then we're going to close with a song. One of the go-to passages during this week, this Passion Week that we're in, is a prophetic Old Testament passage in Isaiah 53. Some of you know it. You know, he was wounded for our transgressions, he was bruised for our iniquity. You know, our sin was placed upon him, and by his stripes we're healed. But in that particular passage, there is a verse that I want to draw your attention to. It's also verse 6. Verse 6 of chapter 53 of Isaiah. It says, we all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. Simply put, let me say it to you this way. Without Christ, we are lost. And if we are lost, there is confusion. While it may be in varying degrees, when you are lost, it produces confusion. And we have got this need of getting our spiritual bearings. And I just want to say, if you are listening to me today and you have never pointed your heart towards Jesus, you know, like a compass, you've never oriented yourself towards him, I want to invite you to do that today. I want you to seize this moment as we talk about Jesus being the way, the truth, and the life. You know, some of those things, just like the disciples went through, I'm sure we've all went through awkward moments in life. Maybe we found ourselves in a place that just doesn't feel right to us. I want to invite you to point your bearings. Get your bearings, point your life, point your hearts towards Jesus. Maybe you've gone through some type of betrayal in your life, some type of rejection in your life. Maybe you're confused about even all this stuff that we got going on right now. I just want to invite you, if you have never, ever pointed your life towards Jesus, do it today. It's as simple as saying, Lord, I'm lost. I'm confused. I haven't used you as my fixed point to get my bearings in life. And for that, I'm sorry. I ask you to forgive me, and I want to do that. I want to point my heart. I want to point my life towards you. It's that simple. It's you deciding whether to orient your life towards Jesus. I invite you to do that today. But I'm also reminded that just as those who had followed Jesus had spent 3 years with him, entertaining his every word and listening and trying to take what he was saying to heart, just like many of you listening to me today have done. But it doesn't exempt us from losing our way, so to speak, from getting confused, from being anxious and fearful and worried and upset about many things. And when we do that, even as believers, even as followers of Christ, we lose our bearings to some level and to some degree. And I want to encourage you today, you may be a longtime follower of Christ, but maybe there's something, even in the midst of what's going on in our world right now, you just feel like you're out of sorts. I want to encourage you to refind your bearings again today. You know, there's an old hymn writer that wrote a phrase to a song that goes like this: prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. There is something in this human nature in each one of us that wants our own way, that wants, you know, we venture off into places unknown trying to find something, and in so doing, we get confused, we get disoriented. Today, Jesus, whether it's a first-time situation or maybe it's the first time in a long time kind of thing, he wants us to look to him to find our bearings. I am said that he would be what we need him to be. And he didn't say that I would give you all of your wants. He said, I will be what you need. And one of our greatest needs in life is to have our bearings. I want to pray with you before we close in a song that the Lord might help you in regards to your bearings in life. Father, I thank you that you are all that we need you to be. And Jesus, particularly today, we thank you that in the midst of our troubled hearts, in the midst of those moments in our lives, Lord, when we're not quite sure or we're totally sure that we're confused, you would have us to find our bearings again in you. To have that need of being lost met by you. So today I pray, Lord, that whether somebody's listening who's never asked you to ever be their bearings, I pray that they would choose in this moment of prayer right now to pray to you and to ask you to become their bearing in life. And for those, Lord, who are struggling with things in life, they're struggling with, you know, they've lost their bearings maybe financially, or they've lost their bearings in terms of their job. I just think about the days being different than what we're used to, and somehow that feels confusing to us. I pray today, Lord, that you would help each of us, Lord, find you to be our way, find you to be our truth, and then we can live in the abundance of your life. Your blessing, the abundant life. Lord, truly, truly, you are what we need. And you will meet our deepest needs if we turn our life and turn our hearts towards you. We love you and we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless you. I look forward to being with you, I hope sometime soon.